Patterson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Unfortunately, this case is glaringly tainted by Congress' offer to stop inter-party refinancing. Hopefully, those new review proceedings will provide a better opportunity to explain some new issues to our department. Certainly, if we look at the first reported order on the new review proceedings, the judges in that case at the board spent 16 laying out the claim construction that is discussed in that review proceedings. So, hopefully, the new review proceedings will address the issues in this case. The error in this case was an error on single claim trade. The parties agreed that it was not the court's decision on the claim construction. The claims are either valid or invalid at the end. So I'm going to limit my arguments to the claim construction issue and our ability to address the issue with respect to the statutory provision. The phrase here is construed under a broadest reason of construction, but not narrowly, is admittedly invalid. Now, the 81 patents describe several different embodiments, but this is not a single embodiment of patent. One of those embodiments includes what's known as a planet satellite configuration. The planet being equivalent to a pacemaker defibrillator, the satellites being equivalent to stents that are about the size of the ferrule of a pencil that holds the eraser. The claim issue here relates to the phrases and the terms sensing and detection. And they're used in a phrase which the patent owner has attempted now by argument alone.
I don't understand how you can read this claim as covering the planet and satellite embodiment, since it talks about detection by the sensing circuit of the arrhythmia.
Right. And that's at the heart of the issue. If you take a look at the board's opinion, what the board said was sensing means detection of the equal position.
Well, usually it does.
And in the context of electrical activity, the board is correct, and that is what the evidence says. But this invention has two other embodiments.
Also, I mean, what's unclear about the claim language? It talks about detection by the sensing circuit of an arrhythmia.
And that detection in the context of an electromechanical disassociation is done by a mechanical pressure sensor. Because in an electromechanical disassociation, it's talked about in claim 24 of the patent, or column 24 of the patent, the electrical activity is still falling. The mechanical activity shows no refusing pulse.
But can't the sensing circuit perform both the sensing function and the detector function?
In a mechanical context, that is our position, it can. In an electrical context, the evidence of record by Dr. Kroll, who's a recognized expert, 300 patents to his in field cardiac rhythm management, says, look, I don't understand this. What they're trying to say, if you apply it in an electrical context, if a sensing means looking at the depolarization, detecting means analyzing all of the depolarization.
Well, usually sensing means that, but they've written the claim so that sensing involves detection of the arrhythmia. I mean,
they wrote the claim 2 years after the case. That's the problem. The claim is not intentional. There's nothing, as the patent office admits, there's nothing in the specification that uses this phraseology. Honestly, I believe that the patent owner was gaming the system here.
Well, what's unclear about the language here?
The word detection, if used in the context of mechanical and chemical, can mean something other than the analysis of depolarization electrical signals. There is nothing that limits it. If you take a look at the other original claims, you'll see that the sensing circuit in claims 62 and 63 includes both mechanical and electrical sensors. So the patent clearly recognizes the combination of both of these could be used together to accomplish detection of arrhythmia. So detection and sensing is not just electrical signal, and it's not just analysis of a depolarization. It can be more.
You're saying because there's no electrical detection in a standalone device, the invention can only cover the planet satellite.
No. My argument is there is no clear disavowal in that language, given the fact that they also have mechanical and chemical, that cabin that claim language to just electrical. In specification, the patent owner defined goes to great length to be their own lexicographer. Electrical function means electrical stuff. They knew how to limit this claim to just electrical activity, but they chose not to. And when faced with the opportunity...
If we read this claim as limited to electrical activity, you lose?
Yes, and that's wrong, because they have not done so. They have not either enabled that or so made a clear disavowal in the original prosecution history so as to limit it to that. To view the evidence of the record, if you take a look at paragraphs 12, 13, and 14 of Dr. Kroll's declaration, he goes in and talks about this issue. This is a confusing patent.
But electrical function isn't in the claim.
No, it is not. The word detection is in the claim. The word sensing is in the claim. Those have a meaning in the context of electrical activity. But this invention is more than just electrical activity. The invention expressly includes at column 6 of the patent.
You're really making an enablement argument, aren't you?
I'm making an enablement argument separately, but this is a pure claim construction argument. And if you look at column 6...
But your claim construction argument depends upon enablement, whether or not they've enabled a planet satellite that doesn't have electrical detection.
And as far as we're concerned, if they use mechanical or chemical, that is enabled. At page 22 of our blue brief, you'll see a chart that lays out the planet satellite and entirely intravascular environments, and then has the three different kinds of sensing: chemical, mechanical, electrical. That six-square chart has been in our brief and our filing since our first opportunity to respond after the initial opposition. And in there, what we say is five of those six boxes are enabled, and there's 26 places in the specification where they're enabled. One isn't. And this claim, interpreted by the board and is argued by the patent, is attempting to be directed to that one box, because that's the only one that was meaningful to my original client. Our argument is this claim cannot be broadly construed to just that one box. There's no clear disavowal that says the other five boxes should be ignored based on claim language that only contains the term sensing and detection. It doesn't say electrical function. It doesn't say sensing electrical carry activity. It doesn't say detection based on depolarization of signals, all of which the patent owner was more than capable of doing during the reexamination should they choose to do so. Now, with respect to the enablement argument, my position is we were unable to advance that. Because in this reexamination, the examiner agreed with this original. And after the office action, where the patent owner amended some, but not all the claims, the owner canceled those claims in response to our arguments for not able to, and chose to write out only these unamended claims. And again, the second time around, the examiner is reading and said, I agree with you, all the claims are rejected over the argument. It was only on the third strike, on the right of appeal notice, that the examiner in the re-exam unit reversed his position. And at that point, contrary to what the patent office had suggested that I could have made an argument, I'm not allowed to make any more arguments at the right of appeal notice. I ruled. So I had no ability to raise an issue that really revolved around the examiner doing his job to apply Section 112 to this claim construction. And he couldn't do it, and I couldn't raise it up until the point they were coming before this.
But you didn't challenge the ordinary meaning of sensing and detection, right?
Oh, yes, we did. That's the evidence of record that I petitioned after the right of appeal notice to get Dr. Kroll's declaration testimony in. And at A9 of the board's order, they cite Dr. Kroll's testimony. And in that testimony, it's clear that sensing and detection in the context of electrical illusion have an ordinary meaning. And then he goes on to say, but if you put that beyond the context of electrical arrhythmias, including mechanical and chemical, I don't know what the meaning. And that was the evidence of record. And nobody ever took the record by a person skilled in the art in this case about what the claims. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pedersen. Ms. Stoll.
I'm spending time today with Mr. Johnson regarding my feedback official report. If I cover the claim construction, and Mr. Johnson covered the 1.96 issue, we'll be, of course, on the standard this is your time. We're prepared to answer any questions in hand. I first want to start by talking about the question of whether these claims cover the electrical, chemical, and chemical claims. If they're like that, I would submit that it's called the secret and advisory opinion. As the board indicated on pages 817 through 18 of its opinion, the question of what kind of sensing occurs is irrelevant to the prior art, because none of the prior art teaches a device with a sensing circuit for detecting arrhythmia inside a blood vessel, regardless of whether the sensing is chemical, mechanical, or electrical. In any event, the site is column 824. You should also read column 24, you should also be column 25. So there you'll see that what that's talking about is using a mechanical blood pressure sensor to discriminate between two different types of things. What would discriminate with not really just a living presence called tachycardia, but instead to determine whether that tachycardia is harmful or not, whether it's hemodynamically stable or not. So that would be another claim that Mr. Peterson talked about, because I had to talk about combining electrical and mechanical. You would always have to have electrical sensing for this location. Turning to the question of enablement is not part of the issue for this case on the court. It was argued below. It is some sort of enablement argument was made below initially during the discount. And we never pointed out that that's not a proper issue and it's put in front of the exam. And the response was withdrawal of the enablement argument. And it's never made sense. There were any one trial set the other one. We submit that the construction process was based on the plain language, the ordinary meaning of those terms for detection of arrhythmia. Those terms aren't detection alone, but detection of arrhythmia. And that's consistent with what you call interpretation. And everybody, all the parties, understand that the word detection in that context. If the court doesn't have any further questions for me,
and you kind of waived the rules to allow the Kroll declaration in, right?
What happened was a petition. It was after the man. And what happened was they petitioned, their false petition, and the PTO considered that petition, granted that petition, it was after the man, and they were allowed to have the Kroll declaration in.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's hear from Mr. Johnson.
May it please the court. There are two responses to the Bolson's argument that they didn't have an opportunity to argue the multiplier charge. The first is that it was late. They didn't argue that their briefs to the board, and either the open brief to the board or the reply brief to the board. For that reason, it's clearly waived. They argued, however, that they didn't have an opportunity to because the rules don't permit them to file that sort of argument after a rant. Well, as just mentioned, they know what the rules state when it comes to waiving particular rules. In this case, when they wanted to submit the Kroll Declaration, they knew that the rules do not permit evidence after a rant, but they filed a petition under 183. Which specifically gives applicants an opportunity to waive whatever rules are available. And that's just what they did. They filed a 183 application requesting the office to submit the Kroll Declaration. And the office granted that particular petition. So although the rules in this case might not have permitted them to make the arguments that they are now arguing now as it relates to Rule 906, they could have filed a 183 petition to request that the rules be waived. They're fully aware of that.
do you waive under 183 in order to allow arguments that were not made before? I mean, I can understand waiving it to allow documentary evidence like an affidavit, but what about legal arguments?
Sure. They should have preserved those arguments below. And in other words, in this case, if they thought that Rule 906...
But what if they didn't have the opportunity to preserve the arguments below?
Sure. After they received the RAN, what they should have done was argued 112. But if the office would have determined that it's improper under 906, at that point, they could have filed a 183 petition requesting that the director review the examiner's decision as it relates to the 906 rule itself. But they chose not to do so in this particular...
What difference does it make? I mean, the statute is perfectly clear, isn't it, that 112 isn't part of the inter-parties re-exam at this point in time?
And that's our second response, that the statutes are very clear as it relates to inter-parties re-examination. 311, the past statute, specifically state that requesters are to file their request based upon prior art. And 314 goes on to state that inter-parties re-examination proceedings are to be conducted based upon the procedures of initial examination as outlined in 132 and 133. And those two provisions merely relate to notice that should be given to applicants as relates to projections and the time that applicants should have whenever they respond to those particular projections.
Does this issue have any significance for the future given the AIA?
That's interesting because there are changes that would allow for these particular issues.
Yeah, but construing the old statute has no significance for the future, right? Except there may be a few proceedings that are still under the old statute.
As it relates to IPR, that's correct. Yeah. But there are new post-grant review proceedings that would allow for sort of arguments to be made. So Congress actually contemplated this particular issue, and they've provided some sort of remedy there in the statute. So it's our position that Congress's intent to have these sort of positions restricted to just examination of prior art is clear. And to the extent that there might be some ambiguity in any of the past statutes relating to inter-parties re-examination, we believe our construction is reasonable and should be entitled to deference. If there are.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Pedersen?
With respect to Ms. Gold's allegation that there is no prior art in the record rebutting the showing of an entirely vascular device based on mechanical sensing, I have to respectfully disagree. As a rebuttal piece of prior art, put in three pieces of prior art in the filing after the rank. But again, because of the nature of this process, we really weren't invited to do so. They were never considered. We couldn't get them in. Once the game changed at the 11th hour from arguing pulse generator, which was arguing the first office action and the second office action, to arguing about sensing and detection of the claim construction issue in the right of appeal notice, our hands were tied. So we did put three references in there. Could we file another inter-party re-exam or inter-party review to challenge those? Yes, but my client has run out of money. So, because of a 5-year process, that's why Congress said this is a bad process. And the issue, at the end of the day, revolves on what's the meaning of this phrase that they chose to switch to at the 11th hour to try and narrow their claims without any clear dispositive, because they're doing it by interpretation. In terms of the position that stable versus unstable hemodynamics are somehow not in arrhythmia, an issue first raised right before you even argued today. That is not what a person is feeling when they're going to assert. And in fact, actually, if you take a look at that citation in the patent to that thing, it talks about predicting what will happen. Predicting and determining are the two words used in the passage about stable versus unstable hemodynamic arrhythmias detected by mechanical sensing. Well, predict, detect, determine.
trying to figure out what kind of therapy you need to do in advance. More importantly, I would say, if you take a look at Claim 58 of the case, there, in a mechanical sensing embodiment alone, because there are other dependent claims that add the electrical embodiment before that, in a mechanical sensing embodiment alone, you're delivering electrical therapy in response to something that's detected only by a mechanical sensor. So it's very clear that they meant to have therapy to treat arrhythmia based only on mechanical sensing embodiments. With respect to the issues regarding 314A, we agree. By statute, as a requester, we cannot raise the Section 112 issue. Our issue is what happens when the patent owner argues claim construction that we don't believe is supported. 314A says that prosecution should occur under Section 132 and 133. And, you know, in your opinion, in Ray Portel Packaging, I thought you had the right approach, which was once initiated, the re-exam needs to proceed according to normal examination rules and process.
I wrote a dissent.
You wrote a dissent. You didn't write Portola.
That's not, not the law.
It is not the law. I'm arguing that it should be the law and that this case presents excellent
It'll be. It will be the law in the future, won't it?
Yes. That's what I mean. I would certainly hope, Your Honor. Because this is a rebuttal position, that's what makes it different from the statutory prohibition against raising it as the grounds for the appropriate examination. And that's how I would say that this case presents a different situation, which you can see the problems with the USPTO's rules as a result of their application of the situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pedersen. That concludes our morning.